Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Now, he is the biggest selling Irish novelist of all time. Fire is his latest work in the Element series and his most personal, certainly his most daring. It's a gripping read, but it's also chilling and difficult in places. And that means we'll be discussing some adult themes. So listener discretion is advised. John Boylan, good morning to you.
Good morning.
John Boyne, rated 18. I remember you...
That's my old Tinder profile.
I remember you announcing in 2022, I'm out of here. I'm going to stop writing for a couple of years, go travel and have a nice time.
That's right. Yes, it was in 2022, I published All the Broken Places, and it was 30 years since I'd started publishing. My publishing career began. And yeah, I sat here and talking to your predecessor, and I said, right, I need a break. I'm going to, you know, take a couple of years off. I've been obsessed with Below Deck, you know, that reality show.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was actually convincing myself that I was going to go off and become a deckie for a couple
really?
Of years and do something
great.
Else. So, you know, I said it to my agent, said it to my publisher. Everybody said, okay, that's fine. You can go and do that. And then I got home and I was like, okay, what do I do now? So instead of semi-retiring, I wrote 4 books and a picture book. So...
How long was that retirement?
Oh, I think it was sort of between leaving RTE and dinner time, maybe.
Between the interview and leaving. Yeah. Great. Thanks for that. Well, look, this is the third in the series of 4 short novels or novellas. What do you want to call them? Each from the perspective. There's all one theme here, isn't there?
Yes. The whole sequence was built around the theme of sexual abuse, but from 4 different perspectives. So Water, the first book, was narrated by a woman who was questioning whether she had enabled those crimes. Earth, the second one, was narrated by a young man who was complicit in the crimes. Fire, the new one, is narrated by a woman who is the perpetrator of those crimes. And the final book, next May, Air, is from the perspective of a victim.
Right.
So they're 4 standalone novels, standalone stories, so they can be read individually, but a minor character from each becomes the narrator of the next one. So they're all connected, characters pop in and out. And, you know, when the foursome are finally out there, you know, you can actually read them in any order that you chose to.
Mm-hmm.
But it just looks at the story from different perspectives.
The Earth was kind of a thrilling courtroom drama.
Yeah.
That's why I think Fire hit me like a wallop.
Yeah, and one of the jurors in Earth is the narrator now of Fire. And, you know, Earth was basically built around that idea of the various cases we've seen in different countries about sports trials and so on.
Yeah.
Consent and the way young women are treated in courtrooms when they bring a case of rape to court. And there was a thriller element to that. I've always loved courtroom dramas, to be honest. And I love those kind of books and those kind of TV shows. So that was quite intense, because every alternate chapter was in the courtroom itself. So I enjoyed writing that. Fire was a much more difficult proposition, I have to say.
How do you describe? I mean, I find it difficult even... I mean, it's from the perspective of this woman who is Freya.
Freya. Well, I knew at the start of the sequence that one of the books would have to be narrated by a perpetrator. And I thought, well, it would be interesting to do it from the perspective of a woman. Because we do, I don't know if you've noticed this, but in recent years, I've seemed to see an awful lot of articles in newspapers of women who are sexually abusing boys in their charge, often teachers, say. And we are accustomed to the stories of men who have done this. And we are, quite rightly, always outraged by it. And the thing that has always struck me is when you see one of these cases in a newspaper about a woman who has abused, say, a 15-year-old boy, if you're foolish enough to read the comments afterwards, you know, you'll see these people, these guys saying things like, oh, I wish that had happened to me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And it's not a joke. It's not funny. It's not something that you should wish would happen to you, because spin around the genders, you would be quite rightly outraged. And a 15-year-old boy is just as incapable of giving consent as a 15-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And a woman who commits these crimes is just as culpable as a man. So I thought I would write it from that perspective. But honestly, to spend 9 months or so with that voice in my head was not easy. Because I'm still trying to find a way as a writer. You still have to, I guess, find some way not to feel compassion for your narrator, but you still want the reader to understand her actions in some way and to feel, not to justify it, I don't know what the right word is, some form of empathy for somebody that finds themselves in this position.
It's an extraordinary ask for
the
reader.
It is, yeah.
I think perhaps you wouldn't have been able to do that was it not a part of a quartet of books on this theme.
Yeah, it would have been, it would have certainly been more difficult. And I knew I wouldn't start that way. I always felt, because I knew I wanted to go the fourth one to be the victim. So I felt the third one would be this way. And actually, you know, not to get ahead of myself, but the victim story is actually the most optimistic of the four, because I wanted to go out on a positive note, that it would be the sense of feeling that even if something like this happens to you in your life, you do not have to let it scar your life. You can overcome it. So number three was always going to be the most difficult. So for me as the writer, spending that period of time with that in my head, also knowing I'd spent a year on the year and a half on the first two, I still had a fourth one to come. It did kind of weigh me down quite a bit as I was writing it.
And you've written some pretty dark things.
Yeah, I have. But this sequence, I mean, I think the sequence is the best thing that I've done. But I like pretty much in the last couple of weeks, I, you know, finished the final one. I've dotted the I's and crossed the T's. And I feel like a weight is off my shoulders in some way. It's kind of nice to come out the other side of a big project like this and to feel that I hope I have done the story, the themes, good service in it, and that people who read it find something of value in there. But it is also a relief for me as a writer to start something new now in my life and to move away from that subject. I feel I've written myself out of this story now entirely.
Written yourself out, because we've heard you talk about your own story of abuse in the past, so which is why you have this perspective and you can...
Yeah, and I had published a novel, A History of Loneliness, in around 2012, 2013, which was the first book I set in Ireland and the first kind of personal book I wrote. And I wrote about it then, and then I took time away from it, and then I started this sequence. And, you know, I've written about it in articles and talked about it on radio shows and so on, about my own experiences that, and I won't bore people with, you know, what I've said before, but, you know, there was the trial that was going to happen this year, but the guy died, so that didn't come about. And but I feel like this has been very cathartic, actually, really? For me, and for me to just be able to tell this story and to explore my own emotions as they have been involved in it. And I hope maybe to have been some voice as well for other people who perhaps haven't had don't have the platform that I have in order to be able to write and talk about it and to feel that you can move past these things and you can get on with your life.
And you're covering every possible angle
of
this enormous theme.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the most curious things about Fire, it struck me, is almost like you're daring the reader to be like a juror and trying to weigh up all this intense web of puzzlement, because Freya, the perpetrator, is in a job caring for people.
And she's very good at it. She is a surgeon in a burns unit, and she cares very much for her patients. She's extremely good at her job. Mm. And I guess it does challenge the reader that you're reading one chapter where you see just how committed she is to what she's doing in her career. And then we get to another chapter where she's going out in the evening and, you know, doing something incredibly heinous and causing incredible damage to young, innocent kids. And if I've done it right, by the end of the book, hopefully the reader will understand what has got her to this place. And again, that is not to justify anything, but will give the reader some idea of why these things can happen. You know, they do say that, I mean, obviously not everybody who is abused would become an abuser, but that people who abuse probably have themselves been abused. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to explore that with her. I hope there isn't any sense in the book that the reader will be on her side, but that, you know, people are complex. And I like the kind of book that I can get to the end of as a reader, where I don't have just a black and white view on who the character is, that it will challenge me and it will make me think about it and maybe want to, you know, maybe give the book to a friend or something and say, you know, what did you think about this? This is complex stuff, because we are all complex people.
I mean, in the modern criminal justice system and in the field of psychiatry, they're doing that very thing, aren't they? They're trying to find out why abusers become who they are. The crux of the whole thing seems to come down to that moment when Freya, the perpetrator, and another character, Rebecca, have a frank conversation about whether trauma from abuse results in what then unfurls. Because everybody involved in that conversation is connected to all four books.
Yes, Rebecca, readers will have met in the first novel, Water, where she is the daughter of the narrator and appears briefly in one chapter. And she pops up in Fire as She's the girlfriend of another character, and they do have this tough conversation. And Freya thinks she's just at a retirement party talking to a colleague's girlfriend, and it's just, you know, casual chat over drinks. But the conversation turns in a way that she hadn't expected. The reader, of course, is one step ahead of her, yeah, in a way, if you've read the, you know, the others, and knows that there is more going on in this conversation than we think, or that she thinks. But I think it was one of the key scenes in the book. Sometimes you write those kind of scenes and you, as a writer, you go back to them and you rewrite that dialogue over and over and over, just trying to make it as intense and authentic as it can possibly be.
Oh, yeah, it is. And plus, there's another bit we don't know quite yet.
Yeah. One thing I often say to aspiring writers when I'm in universities or something is, one of the things you should always do is read that stuff aloud as the writer yourself, because you hear that. I always do that. You know, read it aloud and you hear how the dialogue is working and whether it sounds authentic and, you know, the way people interrupt each other in normal conversation and so on, and over-talk each other and so on. You know, I always say read it aloud. That's what I did with scenes like that.
So it feels like a drama.
Yeah.
I've heard you say before as well that you think you're doing something properly when you're uncomfortable yourself writing it.
Yeah. When you're uncomfortable, but when you're excited about it, when you feel like maybe on those days where you know you've got something there, but you're really having to work hard to draw out the story, to draw out the character. And you get to the end of the day and say, I still haven't got it. But it's like a puzzle. It's like a big jigsaw puzzle or something. And you're excited about getting up the next day and sitting down to solve it. And then, you know, I think any experienced writer knows instinctively the moment when, yeah, that's it. Now, any other word is going to damage the book.
I see.
You know, you feel... I'm ready now.
There's an interesting question in an email here. It says, will you ask John what kind of research he did for the book from the perspective of the abuser?
I spoke to some therapists who had worked with abusers, and obviously they couldn't give me names of people, but they would tell me about their experiences with it. I've been reading a lot of nonfiction over the last couple of years about abuse in its different perspectives for these four. I'll be absolutely honest and say I didn't have an awful lot to go on in terms of a woman doing this. There's so much more about men doing this. And so it was really those, you know, articles and trying to understand those teachers that might do it. It's not always teachers, it could be anybody who do that. So a lot of that part in terms of being a woman committing these crimes, I basically had to use my imagination, and as a writer does, and try to figure out why somebody would do it.
But having finished it, you're done with the topic. Does that help you?
I feel I am. Having written History of Loneliness and now having written these four, I feel I've said everything I have to say on the subject. And I mean, of course, you know, if some amazing idea came into my head in 10 years' time, sure. But it's not something I would look to return to.
It was a difficult place to go.
Yeah, it can be.
Are you finished with your own trauma?
Definitely, definitely. And I have been finished with that for a couple of years, because I think when I started this and when I, you know, have been talking about it, I feel very much that it's important to say to anybody who's gone through something like this in their life that you do not want to spend your life being somebody else's victim. You know, you can get past that. You can not make your peace with something that happened to you, but you can say, well, it was part of my life. It happened. And I feel no shame about it, and nobody should. And it's good to be able to talk about it. In my case, it's great to be able to write about it. It's part of my story. It's part of my history. But there's 100 things that are part of my story and part of my history. And I make the adult choice not to let it be any bigger a part of my life than it needs to be.
Wow, really well said. I must give out the helplines, rt.ie/helplines, for people who do need support. Hopefully they get to the place where you are now.
Yeah, and we all have that. There are their helplines, there are your friends, there are your family. And I mean, even people who don't write can sit down and put down into words things that they may want to just write privately for themselves, like a diary. And I honestly think that that can help.
What are you going to do next? More time off? Retire again?
Well, this probably won't surprise you when I say that I've now started a new book, something completely different. And what's nice is, because that's part of, like, it's a new part of my brain being used. It's something funny. It's something historical. And, you know, again, it's nice to be able to put some jokes in for a change.
Is that because it was such a dark place?
I often think, I don't know how other writers maybe listening in would feel, but I often think that each book is almost a reaction to the previous one. Mm. You know, that you write one thing, and if it's, say, dark, maybe you just need something light then. Or if you write something contemporary, you need something historical. Or if you write first person, you need something third. Okay. You know, because it just frees up a different part of your brain. So I started something, and I'm in that first section of the first draft where I'm just incredibly excited by it and I'm just loving writing it, which is always good because I think that gets across then in the final draft to the reader.
That's still even a book away because, of course, the fourth of this one is Air, and that comes out next.
That comes out in May. And then we're going to put all four together into the Elements, which was always the plan, into one book called The Elements, which will be published then as a combined novel in September of next year. So yeah, this is a couple of years away. So,
brilliant, brilliant book, says June in Galway. So they're reading it already. This is what I like when the bookshops sneak it out before the release date, which is today.
Today is, publication day. You're my first conversation on publication day.
And so that one, so the May 2025 and the next one, so on. Come here, I know you a little bit, John, and you've said this publicly, but you're in love.
I am. I'm a smitten kitten. I have. Listen to me giggling. I'm giggling like a schoolgirl. I'll probably get told off for that. So, 3 months, and we had our first romantic weekend away. And this is what screams romance. We went to Paris, which does scream romance, but stayed in the hotel that Oscar Wilde died in, and the room Oscar Wilde died in. And that, you know, I'm the last of the, you know, great romantics.
Is the wallpaper still there?
That's right, wasn't it? Like, either the wallpaper has to go or I do.
Yes.
So that was lovely. And life is really, really pretty great at the moment.
What does one do romantically around Paris?
Oh, I mean, we took a, you know, cruise down the Seine, went to the Eiffel Tower, drunk wine on those little cafes. You know, I love those, you know, those outdoor cafes in Paris, and you can sit there and just people watch for
the basket
ages
in chairs
and just chat, you know, chat all sorts of nonsense to each other and watch people go by, all the stylish French beautiful people.
Dying for someone to be rude to you so you can go, I had the full experience.
Yeah, always, yeah.
As good as a croque monsieur, is it?
And they're also wonderfully dressed and things. And
I know.
But it was great. So, yeah, life's pretty good. And then off to New Zealand after Christmas for a month.
This is your ritual, isn't it?
Yeah, get out of the cold weather. And so 7 weeks. So I'm doing the first part myself and then he'll come over for the last part. And,
A second trip.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So, you know, expose this pasty white Irish body to the beautiful people of Bondi Beach.
Because, come here, I have to read you your interview with Roisin Ingall in 2020.
Oh, gosh, what did it say?
I've decided to shut down that part of my life.
Oh, no, Lord.
I've never been successful in that part of life. I will never date again.
Oh, my God.
I don't want to sound like a total misery guts, but no one's ever loved me.
Oh, God, did I say that?
Yeah, according to Roisin Ingall.
I mean, if we've learned anything from the start of this when I said I wasn't going to be writing anymore for a few years, I talk an awful lot of nonsense.
How could you lie to Roisin Ingall?
I know, the loveliest person in the world. But I must have been going through a bad day. That's terrible.
It was 2020, should we point out. I think the entire world was going through
a bad
time.
Yes.
But thankfully, you don't mean the things you say.
No, I don't mean it. It's all rubbish. So.
There are lovely messages still coming in for you. Morning, adore John Boyne. The Heart's Invisible Furies is my all-time favourite book, but this series has captured me and I can't wait to read Fire. Thanks for having him on. Well, he's having us on, maybe.
Actually, people have been so great about this sequence. It's been wonderful. People have just said it to me, you know, people come to me in a pub or something and say how much they've enjoyed it. And I was a bit nervous at the start. You know, novellas are not the most commercial idea in the world.
Right?
Short little books.
Because they're cheaper.
You're getting 40,000 words as opposed to, Hearts Invisible Furies is 203,000 words.
Yes, good value.
So, 2,000 words longer than Moby Dick, you know. So
is it?
It's longer than fame.
I bet they didn't put that on the marketing at the time. Longer than Moby Dick. And people constantly talk about that book, don't they? Even though The Boy with the Striped Pajamas is probably how you're introduced when you go abroad.
Yeah, well, actually, Hearts is the one that people talk to me about the most. It's the one that sort of people, I think, generally like the most. That has got no controversy to it or anything. It's just a book that people enjoy and get a laugh out of. And I think it's my favourite of my own books, that book, yeah.
Enough of all this lovey-dovey. What's your worst book?
Oh, my second novel.
Oh, do you actually have a?
Yeah, yeah.
Was that Crippen?
No, it's called it's not a bad book, but it's okay. It's called The Congress of Rough Riders. But the second, it's like the second album syndrome. Yeah. You know, that.
Oh, so I must have skipped that because Thief of Time.
Thief of Time was the first one.
Was Crippen then the third?
Crippen was third. Crippen's okay. Right. You know,
Crippen's a great book. You know, so, that's what I thought. Yeah. I actually haven't read your book. Okay. So I can now skip it.
No, I wouldn't say. Oh my God, you know, Kang will be listening and going, it's still on sale. It's still in print.
Who's brilliant at the moment, by the way, just before I let you go?
Oh, gosh. Best book I read recently was Garth Greenwell's book, Small Rain. I really enjoyed that.
Who was it?
Garth Greenwell, an American writer.
Oh, yeah.
Small Rain. That was very, very good.
Okay, look that up. Do you watch a lot of telly?
I think after Tuesday night, I'm never going to watch telly again. But I do. I mean,
Bring Roisin Ingle and tell her that.
I'm really looking forward to the Day of the Jackal, but I go off to UK for 10 days on a book tour tomorrow, so I have to wait until I come back.
That's Eddie Redmayne. That looks good.
Because that's actually a great book. I read that for the first time about 2 years ago, and I'd never read Frederick Forsyth before. And wow, that book is a page turner. That really works.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
The series will be handy. Listen, John Boyne, thanks so much and congratulations. Okay. Enjoy the success of Love and Travel.
Thank you very much.
Fire is out right now and it's published by Doubleday. Isn't that crazy?